The views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Hronco Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Hronco Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings or mixed emotions infringing upon the PC movement should be referred to Hronco's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 to which time you will be told to shut it. On behalf of Hronco Radio Network, I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you! Ha, 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 ha!
Ah, it is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way then, sir. Please follow me.
Who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories. Watch them
free. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, the host of the show, Mark.
Alright, and there we are. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. The topic of the first thing we got out here tonight, folks, it's Thanksgiving week. And like everyone else, I'm sure we're all busy preparing, getting your houses ready for guests, or preparing to travel and go see guests, which I'll tell you what, you know, after having done both, you know, going traveling and seeing a family, or having a family come and travel to see you, I think I prefer to stick it around and having them come see me, because traveling on the holidays is such a, well, it's an RPIA, folks, a royal pain in the butt. You know, it's a, what do you do? I'm just not into it. I'm an old fart, don't like fighting traffic. Damn sure don't want to get into any of the stuff that's going on in the airports. Right now there's a threat of people boycotting the pat-downs and everything that's going on with the TSAs at the airports. You gotta love that. So I don't know if I'd want to be anywhere near the airport if that starts to break out. But hey, you know, it is that time of blessings and all the fruits of abundance and the horn of plenty and everything else that we can think of that's just, well, make living here in America worthwhile. But it's something, you know, that we need to think about. And it's one of those things, and I've gone over this a few times in the past, and I'm going to go over it again this year. This is actually the story of the first Thanksgiving. What really, really happened way back when and why we give thanks for what we did today. Now, this is actually written by a guy named Richard J. Maybury. And it's posted all over the world on the net, folks. You know, feel free to take a look at him, but probably the best synopsis of the story. There are several of them out there that are several pages long, but this one here I think we could squeeze into this show without taking up too much time and really get the point across. Now, each year at this time, school children all over America are taught the official Thanksgiving story. And newspapers, radio, TV, and magazines devote vast amounts of time and space to it. It's all very colorful and fascinating. It's also very deceiving. This official story is nothing like what really happened. It's a fairy tale and whitewashed and sanitized collection of half-truths which divert attention away from Thanksgiving's real meaning. Now, the official story has the pilgrims boarding the Mayflower, coming to America, and establishing the Plymouth colony in the winter of 1620-21. The first winter is hard, and half the colonists die. But the survivors are hard-working and tenacious, and they learn new farming techniques from the Indians. The harvest of 1621 is bountiful. The pilgrims hold a celebration and give thanks to God. They are grateful for the wonderful new abundant land he has given them. The official story then has the pilgrims living more or less happily ever after, each year repeating the first Thanksgiving. Other early colonies also have hard times at first, but they soon prosper and adopt the annual tradition of giving thanks for this prosperous new land called America. The problem with this official story is that the harvest of 1621 was not bountiful, nor were the colonists hardworking or tenacious. 1621 was a famine year, and many of the colonists were lazy thieves. In his History of the Plymouth Plantation, the governor of the colony, William Bradford, reported that the colonists went hungry for years because they refused to work in the fields. They preferred instead to steal food. He says the colony was riddled with corruption and with confusion and discontent. The crops were small because much was stolen both by day and night before it became scarce eatable. In the harvest feasts of 1621 and 1622, all had their hungry bellies filled, but only briefly. The prevailing conditions during those years was not the abundance that the official story claims. It was famine and death. The first Thanksgiving was not so much a celebration as it was the last meal of condemned men. But in subsequent years, something changes. The harvest of 1623 was different. Suddenly, instead of famine, now God gave them plenty, Bradford wrote, and the face of things has changed, to the rejoicing of the hearts of many for which they blessed God. Thereafter, he wrote, any general want of famine hath not been amongst them since to this day. In fact, in 1624, so much food was produced that the colonists were able to begin exporting corn. Well, what happened? After the poor harvest of 1622, writes Bradford, they began to think how they might raise as much corn as they could and obtain a better crop. They began to question their form of economic organization. Now, their original form had required that all profits and benefits that are got by trade, working, fishing, or any other means, were to be placed in the common stock of the colony, and that all such persons as are of this colony are to have their meat, drink, and apparel, and all provisions out of the common stock. A person was put into the common stock all he could, and take out only what he needed. This from each according to his ability, to each according to his need, was an early form of socialism, and it is why the pilgrims were starving. Bradford writes that young men that are most able and fit for labor and service complained about being forced to spend their time and strength to work for other men's wives and children. Also, the strong, or man of parts, had no more in division of victuals and clothes than he that was weak. So the young and strong refused to work, and the total amount of food produced was never adequate. To rectify this situation, in 1623, Bradford abolished socialism. He gave each household a parcel of land and told them they could keep what they produced or trade it away as they saw fit. In other words, he replaced socialism with a free market, and that was the end of famines. Many early groups of colonists set up social estates, all with the same terrible results. At Jamestown, established in 1607, out of every shipload of settlers that arrived, less than half would survive their first 12 months in America. Most of the work was being done by only one-fifth of the men, the other four-fifths choosing to be parasites. In the winter of 1609-10, called the starving time, the population fell from 500 to 60. Then the Jamestown colony was converted to a free market, and the results were every bit as dramatic as those at Plymouth. In 1614, Colony Secretary Ralph Hamer wrote that after the switch, there was plenty of food, which every man by his own industry may easily and doth procure. He said that when the socialist system had prevailed, we reaped not so much corn from the labors of 30 men as 3 men have done for themselves now. Before these free markets were established, the colonists had nothing for which to be thankful. They were in the same situation as Ethiopians are today, and for the same reasons. But after free markets were established, the resulting abundance was so dramatic that the annual Thanksgiving celebrations became common throughout the colonies. And in 1863, Thanksgiving became a national holiday. Thus, the real reason for Thanksgiving, deleted from the official story, is socialism does not work. The one and only source of abundance is free markets, and we thank God we live in a country where we can have them. And it's something we all need to think about, folks. That original story. Yeah, it does kind of sound like Obama, huh? Yeah, from each according to his ability. Let's spread the wealth around. You gotta love how liberals view wealth. You know, they never see wealth as being anything more than money. And that is a fact to the situation. And they see money as flowing from wrong. You know, as if the weak never consumed any wealth. You know, as if the weak didn't take part in producing that wealth to begin with. You know, the liberals will just never, ever, ever understand that, you know, what is consumed is wealth. You know, and wealth is something that must be produced before it can be consumed. And that production requires ingenuity, it requires work, and it requires a certain amount of financing. It requires something to get started, some way to get off the ground. You know, whether it's money that you saved up working all your life, saved your pretzel money, your milk money from when you were a kid, or what have you. You made good in some trade and decided to take on that trade for yourself, which many, many, many people do. That is how it's done. But still, it takes an open field to do this. And I'm here to say, folks, that when you have free markets, you have the prosperity out there that does enable you to have social systems that will work on top of that. Now, I don't ever take it into account here or think for a minute that I am against all social systems. I am not. Never have been. Never will be. You know, much like Thomas Paine, I believe that society is the best of all things that mankind can bring out. But government is there because of the worst side of things. We should never confuse society with government. You know, society in every form is a blessing. Government in every form is but a necessary evil. You know, let's stop and think about that. But once you have married government and society, then all of a sudden you got a problem. You have governments that will go out there and start spouting religious causes, you know, such as, we need to take care of the poor, we need to take care of this, we need to help this guy, we need to help that guy, and you will do it, or we will point a gun at you and make you do it. It's that simple. And that shit just doesn't work, because you can't have people resenting it. You know, social systems have to be functioning things that people want to volunteer for. You know, I'm here to tell you something, folks. If you see a social system that is worthwhile and you have the extra to throw at it, knowing full well that you will be reaping the benefits from it, well, God bless you, go for it. By that, I mean your church, your community, you know, what have you. Doesn't matter. It doesn't have to have a organized religion behind it. I look at many of the communities that are up here in New England, and I got to admit that most of them were definitely started around a religious theme. They've all got congregational churches in the center of them somewhere or another, or at least the building that used to be the congregational church. But, you know, let's face it, these are the guys that got together that formed things that people needed to have. You know, medical systems, old folks' homes, retirement homes. You know, just your basic, let's take care of people with the abundance that we have. And that abundance only comes about when you have prosperity. And prosperity only comes about when you have free markets. And you've got honest money in them running those free markets. But that's something we're going to get into later on. I have been invited to come and see a movie that's been called Inside Job. And I hear a lot of people out there talking about this. And somebody that I have been arguing with over the role of the Federal Reserve and a few things. And basically the whole role of fiat money in an economy. Over the last few years, it told me that I need to go see this movie because it's starting to bring him around to thinking what I have been trying to tell him for about 10 or 15 years, which he is, you know, totally dismissed because he's a conservative. You can't believe anything he says. You know the types. You feel people walking into this. You know what it's like. Once you've been stereotyped by a liberal, you know, you can forget ever trying to make any sense to the liberal. The liberal is going to block it out of his head. He's going to dismiss it. He's going to do whatever it is. I mean, number one, look, any truth that you're going to whack this liberal with is going to make his brain hurt. You know, let's face it, he's going to be hurting. He's going to have to go into denial. He's going to, you know, well, you will not be doing anything to assuage his feelings. Matter of fact, you will be hurting his feelings. His feelings will be let down because he believed in people before. Not that he believed that what they said was logical and true, but he believed they were good people. And he doesn't know, and they must know because they're smarter than him. So, you know, we're going to follow that guy. I believe him because I know he's smarter than I am. You remember that old logical fallacy, you know, what do they call that? Playing to the, I don't know, intellectuality or whatever. I can't think of the actual thing, but yeah, it's just the way it goes. Yeah, it doesn't work out that way. Sorry, you know, in the end, reality is going to come about. Reality will be pushing the right buttons, and reality will, you know, foist itself upon you in a very, very, very solid and sudden way. It always does. It always will. You know, which is I was speaking a little bit before the show here tonight. I don't really think, you know, somebody was asking me about, you know, you think this economy's going to turn around? Not soon, not quickly, not at all. You know, I don't see anything different right out there really coming about. Now, let's face it, the new Congress has not been elected yet. It really hasn't. I mean, has not been installed yet. And it's going to be a little while before that happens. You know, make no mistake about it. It will be. And there are people out there who are, you know, still looking forward to having all of these people repeal the health care. And yeah, you know. And it's there's going to be all kinds of stuff. Well, I'm here to tell you, repealing health care may not be as easy as it's going to sound. And it's really, I'll tell you something. We've got a few things up here in the news tonight, and one of them that I am vigorously searching for at this point in time is business. One of the things that the U.S. is going to be up against here, and a lot of our House of Representatives, because I'm here to tell you folks that they are, the first thing that they are going to try to pull off will be a repeal of this health care law. Now, at the same time, these people all believe that it is broken and something must be done anyway. So they're going to try to pull off something else. Christ only knows what that's going to be. I don't think it's going to be something as easy as what John McCain was touting, just allowing people to buy insurance across state lines. I don't think it's going to go that quick and that easy. But however, one of the things you got to look at down here is how business is going to be fighting this. And yes, plan on hearing this, that a lot of your big businesses are going to be fighting against this right now. And there's many, many reasons for it. The biggest reason is big business really thinks that the job of healthcare selection, that everything that they put into it right now is going to become a thing of the past. You know, that even though they understand they will be paying for it, a lot of the weight is coming off of their shoulders. And they all believe that it's going to be cheaper in the long run than it was, than it is now. Now, you know, you and I both know that this is not a true situation, but business doesn't look at it this way. It's concerned with its business. You know, as far as they're concerned, the health care that they have to supply for their employees, or what have you, or the health care that they are supplying for their employees, is nothing more than a pain in the ass that has to be dealt with in order to keep good people. You know, well, if they don't have to deal with it anymore, you know, due to the law, well, that's a positive thing for them. That's the way they're looking at it. You know, not realizing what the hell will be coming down the road. You know, in the future here, you know, exactly what's going to come down out of this, we don't know. But business is looking hard at this thing. And somewhere in the stack of stuff here, I had one on it. Nonetheless, we can move onwards here and find other things. I got a lot of stuff in the list here tonight. One of them here we have, and this is a good one. One of Obama's top economic aides is stepping down. This one down off the Reuters network, unauthored. The White House, by the way, folks, as always, all articles read on this program are for informational, educational, and discussion purposes only. The White House said today that Diana Farrell would step down as deputy director of President Barack Obama's National Economic Council, marking the latest Obama administration staff departure. Farrell, who will leave within weeks, works alongside Council Director Larry Summers, who has already announced his intention to return to Harvard University at the end of 2010. I am grateful to Diana for her services to the nation during extraordinary economic times, Summers said in a statement. The White House is selecting a replacement to run the council, which provides economic advice to the president and helps shape policy. It said it has identified a number of good candidates, including investment banker Roger Altman. Staff turnover has been expected to rise as the administration approached its third year, with people heading back to often better paid positions in the private sector after 24 months in the White House. Now, folks, there's a little more to it than this. I do have another article in here somewhere in this mess, which basically says that Farrell is tired and has just been exhausted from trying to defend Barack Obama's the whole, you know, his economic policies and what the hell is going on down here. And it's not a pretty thing. Not a pretty thing for her. And a lot of them are finding themselves in much the same position at this point in time. You know, look, despite all of the good intentions that are going on, all right, despite everything here, look, despite the fact that the stock market is starting to climb a little bit on a daily basis, despite the fact that you got guys like Paul Krugman and others out there turning around and telling you, well, actually, Paul Krugman made an about-face the other day in the New York Times, came out and said that, if you have any belief whatsoever in the Obama administration's economic policies, you are sadly mistaken. I'll tell you what, yes, can you say failed plans is about the way it's going to look here? Because you cannot run an economy. An economy is the sort of thing that is going to run itself despite what you do with it. Now, you can toy with that economy. You can lay all kinds of regulations and restrictions on that economy. But ultimately, if you want to control that economy, what you've got to be doing is controlling the currency in the economy. And not only controlling the currency, but also controlling the issuance of credit. Now, a lot of people out there are still going to tell you, well, the economy is going to turn around once they resolve the tax situation. This could be true to a certain extent. But the fact of the matter is, right now, one of the things that we have been telling you for a long time has hit ground. All right, and that is the inflation. All right, anybody out there taking a look at their gas prices lately, how much it was that you spent for gas? It is right back up there, approaching $3 a gallon, soon to go over. And this isn't an off time of year. All right, this is not vacation time. This is not summer when you would expect demand to be driving prices up. All right, that's not happening. But on top of that, have you looked at your food bills? Have you seen what it has cost you to go grocery shopping? And I'm here to tell you, folks, in the last 6 months, 25% to 35%. Make no mistake about it. I remember last Christmas, I bought a turkey for $50. 20-pound turkey that cost me $50. And that was the most I had ever spent on a turkey in my life. I couldn't believe it. I mean, definitely, damn sure wasn't the biggest turkey. I have not yet gone and even shopped for turkeys this year. Not yet. Probably going to end up having to do that tomorrow. I've been putting everything off as much as I can. But I believe tomorrow is going to be the day I'm going to make the grocery shopping trip, do everything. And, of course, my wife will make another shopping trip because there's going to be 1,000 things that she thought of. After she has made out the list for me to go to the store with, because I'm the wrong guy. You just don't give Mark money and say, here, go to the store and buy us a Thanksgiving dinner, because I'll come home with everything Mark likes and nothing that anybody else likes. It's just the way it works. But on the way home, I'm sure she's going to turn around, probably spend just as much. But looking at the overall grocery bill for the last 6 months, I mean, I don't really buy a lot of different things each week. There are things that people like to eat and things I like to cook. And, we vary it a little bit week to week. But generally, I could look for a family of four that's here, for spending somewhere between $180 and $220 a week. Well, that's changed. All right? For the past month and a half, 6-8 weeks, I have noticed that I cannot get out of there for under $280. And a couple of times, it's gone right up and over $300. And I'm not taking home anything more than I have before. I'm not stocking up huge, big-time on meats or staples, anything. Just buying what I need as we come along here week to week. I got all my stores handy. Yeah, it's there. If I wanted to sit back and eat up the stores, but, we rotate that stock. It's not the way to go. That stuff's there for when the hard times really hit. But the fact of the matter is here, folks, the inflation is around the bend here. Is anybody hearing about any raises anywhere in your pay? Companies are cutting back. Companies are hanging on to their money. Once again, maybe you can cry this about the tax situation, but right now it is still very hard. I hear people out there telling me that right now you want to go and get money out of a bank, the first thing you've got to do if you want to get a loan is prove to them that you don't need it, basically. But if you are in need of a loan, forget that, buddy. You have got to jump through hoops on top of having an extremely clean credit record. It's not looking good. It's not looking good anywhere. And though where the loans are going out, some of the interest rates are a little bit higher than a lot of people are talking about. We're hearing about mortgages all the time now that are down, under 4%. I heard somebody call 4%. I'll go and try to get one of these mortgages. Once again, you got to prove that you don't need it. And this is a sad, sad, sad situation we are coming into. We are coming into hard times, like it or not. And I don't see the inflation thing turning around. As a matter of fact, you got guys like Bernanke out there who still says that the indicators pointing towards possible deflation are too risky at this point in time to make any other moves outside of the Fed. Not a fun thing to do here. Just not fun, not right, not what God intended. It's not going to be pretty, folks. Any way you look at this coming down the road here with quantitative easing or anything else they're going to do. I mean, the worst part about it is you got guys out there backing this quantitative easing stuff up to the hilt here. As a matter of fact, I have one here, and let me see if I can find a guy's name. I couldn't say it before, but his name was Cariacci or somebody from Minnesota, who I didn't know had such a great big thing to do with all of it. But evidently he does. Let me see if we can find it. I'm sure we will. We're going to get to that one in the next hour. Oh, boy, I'll tell you what. You know, I got a computer, and, I every now and then I really got the idea that I think I'm I can organize things on it. But unless you're an organized kind of guy, a computer will not help you. May put the stuff at your fingertips, but, you know, in the same sentence, it does turn around and seem to... Up, here we are, found it. Nope, Coacher Lakota was the guy's name. He's from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. We did find it. It's on the Reuters News Network by Ann Nachigal. The Federal Reserve's latest effort to drive down borrowing costs to help economic recovery is a move in the right direction, a top Fed official said today. But Minneapolis Fed President Narayana Coacher Lakota first publicly voiced support for the policy last week, warned uncertainty over tax policy continues to drag on growth, and is an argument some on the Fed's more hawkish wing have marshaled in opposition to the U.S. Central Bank's $600 billion Treasury buying program. Now, the Fed program, known as quantitative easing, ignited a storm of protests domestically and internationally after it was announced earlier this month. Critics blame it for pushing down the dollar's value and setting the stage for future U.S. inflation. Well, of course, that's exactly what it's going to do. Coacher Lakota's recent public defense of quantitative easing puts him at the dovish end of the spectrum at the Fed, less concerned about the threat of inflation than the drag of low employment. Fearing that the policy will kindle inflation are misplaced, Coacher Lakota told a business group in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. The U.S. Central Bank has kept interest rates near zero since December 2008 and has already bought $1.7 trillion in long-term assets to support the economy. But inflation is low and trending lower. More purchases of long-term assets will not suddenly spark inflation, which the central bank is already committed to keeping in check, Coacher Lakota said. Well, it can't be there, Mr. Coacher Lakota, because it ain't working. While he expects the effects of the new round of purchases to be relatively modest, he said, he reiterated his support for the program, citing stubbornly high unemployment and uncomfortably low inflation as serious drags on a flagging recovery. The decision reflected Fed concerns inflation could drop further, he said, and would likely have been undertaken even if employment promotion was not part of the Fed's mandate. Now, some U.S. lawmakers last week called for a rewrite of the Fed's so-called dual mandate. While such a discussion is interesting, a narrower mandate would likely not have changed the recent decision, Coacher Lakota said. Coacher Lakota, who will rotate into a voting spot on the Fed's policy setting committee next year, also noted that concerns uncertainty over the future of tax policy and government programs is holding back consumer and business spending. Some Fed officials, including Dallas Fed President Richard Fisher, have used this argument as ammunition against more Fed easing. Fisher, who will also vote next year, has consistently said it's lawmakers, not the U.S. Central Bank, who must act to boost the economy. Echoing that view, Coacher Lakota said investors and savers need more clarity on whether the rising federal debt and new government obligations like the stewardship of mortgage lenders Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac mean taxes will rise or government programs will be cut back. Absent such clarity, the economic recovery will be slower than it otherwise would be, he said. In deciding to embark on the new easing program, the Fed assumed that there would be no massive government spending programs like those launched in the wake of the financial crisis, he told the audience. Now, I want you to stop and think about a couple of things that are going on in this article here, folks. All right, number one, we're told here that the Fed is going to be buying long-term securities. Well, you know what it doesn't say in this article, and one thing that I have not been able to find, despite a very thorough search, are exactly what those long-term securities are. What are they? What are they talking, is giving them some sort of note? Well, the only way the Treasury has of gathering money, folks, is to tax you. That's it. That is the Treasury's sole income, is its tax. Okay, there's excises, there's all kinds of things the taxes fall under, you know. But still, in the end, that is the government's only method of paying back the Fed. All right, so if it is buying a long-term security, it is lending the federal government money. All right, and that's something that you got to understand here. All right, you can't let these writers and the rest of these people twist this around and put it in exactly the opposite. Because what's it do? It leaves you confused. It leaves you standing and staring like a deer into the headlights. I don't know what they mean, but they must be smarter than me. You know, so we have to go along with what they're saying. Well, this is what they mean. You know, stop and think about it, okay? They are buying debt. That means they are lending money, period, okay? And where are they getting that money to lend? Well, what are they telling you here? Through quantitative easing. It means they're just printing it. All right, right now you are in a situation where you have too much money chasing too few goods and services. And you want to double that amount of money, or you want to increase that amount of money? Something wrong there, folks. Now, down the bottom of this, though, is the most blatant statement whatsoever. Okay? In deciding to embark on the new easing program, the Fed assumed that there would be no massive government spending programs like those launched in the wake of the financial crisis, he told the audience. Well, excuse me? What is this if it isn't a massive spending program? Give me a break. You know, this is just, it's absolute insanity, folks. It is a massive, massive spending program. All right, it is a massive borrowing program. It is a massive spending program. And I'm sorry, folks, but this is not going to do anything but make the problem worse. It may put off, you know, the hard crash that I see coming for a little while longer. But I'm here to tell you, folks, that the longer it's put off, the worse it's going to be. All right, and with that, I can't put off taking a break here at the bottom of the hour. It's time for Bob to try to sell a few things, keep up against the inflation that's going on out there in Hawaii. So, folks, take a ride over there to www.hernco.com. Take a good look through everything. Don't forget, it's never too early to start your Christmas shopping. Good time to go. And we will be Rural Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in Internet talk radio. We'll be back after this short word.
If you take the bus 60 miles to school at 5:30 a.m. and the bus is traveling at an average of 30 miles per hour, how are you going to get to your prenatal appointment and still make it to homeroom on time?
Some students are tackling more than just their schoolwork, which is why more than 30% of them aren't graduating. But you can give them the boost they need to make it through by visiting boostup.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
That's the sound of your classmate receiving an attachment of you posing in your underwear. Your ex-boyfriend forwarding the picture to his friends. It being sent to your coach. And worst of all, your dad. All because of the time you posted those pictures on your profile. Anything you post online, anyone can see. So think before you post. For more information, visit www.cybertipline.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through.
Do your part by going to boostup.org and giving a student the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone.
Oh, Arturo, sorry about that, brother, but the show just came back up. Sorry you missed the red talk at the bottom there. But I'll tell you what, hey, folks, I'll tell you, I'm going to give Arturo a chance to talk here. He's an old friend of mine from way back. He's been hanging around here in PL for years. And Arturo, you're claiming you've been a little busy here with your friends and family and work. So, hey, I'm going to hand you the mic back. Just to let you know, I'm not a rude host, my friend. And it is a time of Thanksgiving when we get together and chat with our friends. So, hey, have at it there, my friend. Talk to us.
Good evening, everyone. Well, the people that don't know me, well, I am from Spain and I have 34 years old. Well, I know Vivi and I think most people here since a few years. Vivi, Bumet, and Katy. I think. Well, I want you to talk about the Ireland rescue. Well, people is angry because Spain will pay about 7,000 million euros only for the Ireland rescue. We are paying the Greece rescue, and Spain economy is growing very, very low, a very low rhythm. Our ties, our economy is not growing to 1%, lower than 1%, and to pay another another break for our economy. And in Ireland, for politic users, don't want to our excuses to last days because it was inevitable. So, well, the problem of Ireland is if his economy fall, the rest of European economies fall too. We can't allow that. People say that it's Ireland don't want to rescue, don't want to solution their problems. We must expulse them from Eurozone. People is angry because our economies are not good and the Ireland position wasn't very reasonable. Portugal economy isn't good also, but I don't know how will be evolutionated the Portugal situation. Bank Portuguese are bad, not bad at Ireland, but I don't know how will be spent for the next 2 months. Now not need a rescue, but I don't know how will be happen in the next month, really. Well, Spain is different for the bank situation, because Spain gave money to the banks, rescue the banks, last year ago. The bank problem is solutionated, we have no public debt, but the price of that is our economy is growing near to zero, and will be growing near 2% the next year. This is the expecting growing for our economy the next year. We have a very high unemployment tax rate. We are about 20% of unemployment people. We will pass from 5% to 20. It's something unbelievable. We have the building sector the fault. It was a very important sector in Spain with a lot of unemployment. The global crisis came to us at the same time, and we need to change some of our productive sectors to change maybe our the countries that we sell the products, and will take some times to do that. Is our problem. Well, if you want to ask me something, I will be glad to reply to the questions. Thanks for your time. My mic is free.
All right. Well, thank you, Arturo. Good to hear from you, bud. It's I'd like to comment real quick on a couple of things he said and explain it to people. Now, what he was talking about here is that Spain's part of the Ireland bailout, what he said was $7,000 million. And I want you to understand something, folks, that is the correct terminology. Here in America, we would call that $7 billion. But that's actually a false use of the word billion, and we get away with it all the time. Americans have very much corrupted the language in so many different ways, and it's because of the progressives that have been writing our dictionaries for the last 50, 60, 80 years. All right, $1 million, folks, or 1 million of anything, is actually a million million. You know, when he said 7,000 million, that is actually the correct way to say 7,000 million, because it's not really $1 billion. But it's very important. Now, you know, clarify a little more here what he's talking about. All right, the European economy. All right, and the Europeans are very, very, very steadfast in this. We went through this before. Long-time listeners of this program will remember that back in 2003 and 2004, when we had big scares about the economy, that our economy was heating up. It was moving at 3.5% to 4%. One of the things that was going on back then, and I talked about it back then, was the fact that inflation is going to follow on the heels of this, because it's not just the economy that's flowing up here at this point. Okay, it was also the money supply that was flowing along to keep with it, and it was due to the very low interest rates that were going on out there, you know, in order to revive our economy and do what we could to recover from 9/11/2001. You know, this is what had gone on. And one of the things that we had done back there at the time was to try to convince the European Union to lower its interest rates and heat its economy up a little bit. Now, the Europeans refused at the time. And what ended up happening was we buried them with exports. All right, we were doing really well. The loss on our dollar, okay, meant that American products became cheaper overseas against European products. So we ended up burying the Europeans there for a little while. Make no mistake about it. And despite all the cries from the left about how our dollar was dropping in value, because at the time we still had some inflation here at home, and that was the thing. We weren't we were losing it here at home, but prices weren't climbing that high that fast. If you guys remember back then, a gallon of gasoline, $1.69, $1.79, $1.89, you know, and it was fluctuating around that area. It was a couple of years after that before it went up over $2 a gallon. And it was coming into 2005, you know, it was 2005, 2006 when it started to really, really climb. Food prices started to go along with it then. We also had the corn mess up back in then, which is something Al Gore is in the news here tonight. I got this, hopefully I'll get to it later on. He is apologizing for taking his stake, or for his advice on corn and corn subsidies and corn tax credits. You know, it's one of those things you don't want to do, folks, is burn your food for fuel. You know, you need to eat. You know, your body needs the fuel first. Just a silly ass way you're going about things. But, so what's happening here now? Look, let's face it, the European Union is still stuck. They want to keep their growth to 1% to 2%. They don't want it to heat up too fast, because what will happen then will be the same thing that's going on here. They will have huge bouts of inflation to deal with. All right, and those huge bouts of inflation, okay, are directly the result of central bank policies. Now, they had a very, very, very hard time trying to establish a European central bank. They are still having a hard time trying to establish a European Union. Because let's face it, folks, it does not have a constitution yet. Last time they voted on a constitution over there, it didn't work out. Okay? It did not work out at all. Okay? Got voted down. The Europeans still do not have, as it said, a constitution. They're still fighting over it. It's never going to be ratified by everybody. Matter of fact, I think it was even the French that turned it down the last time. But it was the French, the Dutch, and one or two other countries just shot it down. They're not going to have it. They all have to agree to it before it can come about. You know, they're all going to have to ratify it. So they had to go back to the drawing boards with that. But in the meantime, you got to understand that this is put together, you know, to support the European Central Bank. All right? Make no mistake about that. And that European Central Bank wants to stay in power. And it is a very tenuous power it has to hold on to over there, because they're trying to do this with Europeans. And this is not an easy thing. All right, one must understand that European countries are divided up the way they are because of severe cultural differences. All right, language differences, cultural differences, customs, habits, and a lot of other things. Not at, on top of that, the geography itself lends itself to different industries. I mean, it's just the way things work over there. You can't make everything in every country over there. the trade that goes on internationally between the countries over there is trade that has been going on that way for a long time, you know, because of what is good to grow in some places and what doesn't grow in others, you know, what natural resources you have in some places and what you don't have in others. And it's, you know, despite everything else over there, you know, you got to remember that these countries formed themselves along their own customs, traditions, and everything else, you know, over a period of 1,000 years, you know, right throughout, you know, the Middle Ages, right since the time of the Romans to present day. You know, they have been separate countries for huge reasons. Trying to bring them all in under one big umbrella is a very, very tenuous thing. You know, it's only going to work if people can see a general prosperity in everything. Well, the general prosperity obviously isn't coming out here. As Arturo mentioned, we think we got it bad at 10% unemployment in this country. They have 20% unemployment in Spain. All right, other countries in Europe face much the same thing, and the central banks are not willing to alleviate anything there whatsoever in order to give that up. You know, the way they see it, unemployment is not as big a problem as inflation would be. And it's a simple thing, okay? They're not worried about the people's problems. They're worried about covering their own asses. They're worried about keeping their jobs. The central bankers want to keep their jobs and keep their power and control. That is a very, very, very powerful motivator on the part of anyone once they get power. Don't forget, folks, power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. All right, now, Arturo, you got your hand back up. I know you got some more comments to say on what I said right there. But, hey, mic is yours, bud. Feel free.
Well, I'm agreeing to points with David. European Union is a group of countries with different interests. With different language, cultures, and but with some common interests. But really, in fact, works like individual interests, really. And this is a big problem of the European Union. Well, it's good, of course, I agree with the European Union Treaty, Tratade, I think. Tratade is the word, yes. Because it's for our economy or for some things, it's good to get together, to get a stronger in economy, in foreign politics, and other things. But in fact, when one country have a problem, don't respect the global interest only for the self interest only. It works only for the self interest and don't work in fact. For example, we have for a few years, we have a problem, very big problem with Morocco, for example, and European Union was divided. Because France, for example, located, we have the incident with Morocco, 10 years ago, in local points we had the same problems. We have two blocks really. For example, the German and French block is the engine, the core of the European Union. Sometimes works for themselves, only for themselves. And well, I agree to collaborate and cooperate, of course, with the European Union countries, but sometimes it needs to sacrifice the individual interest in the common interest. We want that the European Union works. We need that the European Union works really, in fact. The countries must know that if you attack the interests of the European Union country, one country, you will attack all the European Union. And this is not war. For example, in the conflict with Russia, or Morocco, I talking about that. For example, we have the energetic conflict with Russia. Russia wants to buy our energetic companies. I think the Endesa, yes, was the third or the fourth company world in importance, energetic importance in the world. They try to buy by a public company, Russia public company, that can do it because the Spanish law can provide to sell to governments directly, and they try to buy by a private. I remark the word private because it in what's private is subventionate and controlled by a state. And they try to buy again and they fail. For example, Spain is independent of the Russian gas. For example, it's one of the few countries that don't depend energetically for Russia, for example. And the conflicts with Morocco too, because all the Arabic countries support Morocco, but the European Union was very divided about to support us. And well, I think if we want that the European Union works, sometimes we must work together, forget some individual interests for the common interest, because in the fact all the countries will be better in all issues. Another point that I want to comment is about the euro, because well, I have the problem, for example, that the euro, maybe some people say that it's too high that we need. Well, Europe is a country that depends on the energy. We have in our own resources of oil, maybe a few in the near region, in we call Mar del Norte, North Sea, well, in near Scotland. That I think is the only important adjustment in the European Union. European Union is depend of the fuel. In fact, euro height is good for buy fuel because the fuel is paid in dollars, and is a benefit for us. But we have a problem: is Europe depend of the exportations. Because the European economy depends on the exportation of main of France and Germany exportation, and a high euro, a euro too strong, perjudicate really serious our exportations. Well, we are discussing about what is more convenient, and it's really difficult to say what must we do. Thanks for your time, Mikey Squid.
Oh, no problem. No problem. And that was very insightful. It's and here's the thing about it though. See, you guys believe that if you have a common interest as far as moving your economy forward, well, it's a good thing, you know. But then you turn around and what happens is you try to get together on. And I'm here to tell you, folks, that when you get together on things like this, the only way you're going to get together is with trade. All right, and it's all going to be trade that's going to become final at the end. It may even be a little tough for me to explain this, but I will let me make this one comment. All right, getting together per se is one of the things that those powers would always want you to do, and the reason being because it's much easier to control you at that point in time. That's like, you know, people, union leaders, they're always pushing to get more unions, more people into a union. All right. Biggest reason for that, it makes every single one of them much easier to control. You know, Julius Caesar once made the comment that he had wished mankind had but a single neck in order for him to break it, or so that he could break it, because that was how much he really just looked down on all of mankind and everything that was going on there. And the United States of America, and I'll be honest with you, and this is something that we have lost a long time ago, really only got together for one purpose, and that was defense. You know, to secure the blessings of liberty upon us and our posterity. You know, and that, I think, is the biggest thing that has escaped the people of this country for the last 100 years. It really has. It's a thing that, you know, you got to understand that we are 50 independent states, and each one of our states has its own economies. You know, now a lot of it, of course, depends on interstate commerce, you know, and being able to sell things over state lines and what have you, which free states ought to be able to do, you know, at their leisure and at their pleasure, you know. But the biggest thing that really bound us all together, and the one thing that when you will see nationalism arise in this country, is when we're attacked from the outside, you know, or when we are facing a common threat from outside of our borders. You know, at that time, boy, I'll tell you what, when that threat is imminent, that threat is real, or that threat has just happened, witness 9/11/01, we put aside politics. We put aside everything else, and we come together as a country. You know, we always have. You know, and at that point in time, you are not looking at 50 individual states. You are looking at 50 states that are the United States of America. And this is a big thing. And I'll tell you something. Bankers, central bankers, financiers, who have you, the big boys out there, you know, who are in control of the currency and money supplies, will always abuse that. You know, make no mistake about it. And that was one of the things that our forefathers warned us about. You know, Thomas Jefferson once said that if we ever allowed a central bank, he believed that banks, that central banks were a much more impending danger to the people of a country than any standing army ever could be. But he said that if we ever allowed a central bank to control our economy by the expansion and contraction of credit, that the banks and the corporations that grew up around those banks would rob every single piece of property out there until the people of this country woke up homeless on the land that their fathers shed their blood for. And that, my friend, is a cold-blooded fact of life. You know, getting together for economic purposes only works good as long as there is fair trade going on. But when it comes down to getting together, what inevitably happens is that a government, and a government, let's face it, is nothing more than a power. It is force. You know, George Washington once said, government is not eloquence. It is not logic. It is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous master and a fearful servant, and should never be left in the hands of the irresponsible. Well, what happens when they get that guise of coming together, coming in? What they always intend to do is make some attempt at redistributing the wealth. You know, and that's the light way of saying rob the rich to feed the poor. And it just, it never works out. The rich resent it. And since the rich are the ones who create the economy, the ones who create the wealth that is consumed by everyone, they just stop creating it. You know, and you turn yourself into a vicious cycle. You know, it's kind of like the old fairy tale about the goose that laid the golden egg. You know, at some point in time, the king got greedy and decided that, well, he's just going to cut that goose open and take all the eggs it had to give. And liberals out there pretty much believe the same thing. They don't seem to understand that wealth is created over a period of time. You know, there may be some cases where wealth is stored, but for the most part, wealth is used to make more wealth. And when that happens, you know, when it's done correctly, wealth is invested, and you get returns. And when it's invested in people and people are helped along the path to more productivity, everyone gets a better shake. Everyone gets a better deal. You know, that's what comes down the line here. You know, Ronald Reagan, I think, said it the best. A rising tide lifts all boats. You know, that is the way to go. Yeah, that's a good one there. I'm getting a little distraction here. Guys are writing in there, TSA, total sexual assault. You guys are dragging me off the point here, but you are absolutely right, you know. And this is the things you got to think about when it comes down to the whole getting together scenario. You know, getting together becomes necessary when you have an outside enemy. You know, if you stop and think about it, one of the things that the Europeans really only ever came together for in the past was fighting off the Vikings. You know, a lot of that is why your countries over there organized themselves the way they were. You know, back around the in between 800 and 1100 AD, you know, the Vikings were terrors up and down. They would sail up rivers. Hell, they sailed all the way to Paris up the Seine. You know, they made their way in inroads all over there, and they were brutal people. You know, the Norsemen were some of the most brutal people to ever walk the planet. And they didn't care. They just took whatever the hell it was they wanted from anybody, stayed wherever they wanted, killed anybody that got in their way. You know, it didn't mean a damn thing to them. And they were not able to fight off until the people of the various countries over there got together, created their own armies, and fought them back. You know, that was really the way it was done. And that, my friend, you know, is the only times in history where getting together really has a difference. You know, well, let's face it, you know, once you fought off those differences, you're still together. Well, what do you do then? You know, and that's when the rats come out from underneath, out of the woodwork, and, you know, and start playing their games. You know, it's just one of those kind of things. You know, and the havoc that they create. Well, look at where we're at today. You know, you're talking about 20% unemployment in your country. You're also talking about, you know, how much it is you're going to have to bail out Greece for. You know, and where will all that come from? You know, is that going to come out of your store of wealth that your country has put together? You know, I think if you take a look and see your store of wealth and see if there is anything, You know, and it's not a debtor country like every other country in the world that has been run by a central bank. You know, you're going to find that it's very little and not enough to do it for anybody. So that money's going to have to be borrowed. It's going to have to be created. Debt will have to be created in order to come about with enough currency to relieve this problem. You know, the problem is, though, that when you create that much more debt, you create an entirely different problem. And these geniuses, these brain banks, these intellectual elite out there, you know, have always got the idea that, well, you know, the next generation will be smarter than us and they'll be able to work it out. Or, you know, through proper legislation, we'll be able to relieve this. Through proper regulation, this won't be a problem. You know, but of course, none of them will ever give you that idea what the proper regulation is going to be. You know, they just think that they're smart enough, which they are not. You know, or that they have the power, which they do not. You know, to bring this around and think they're going to work their way out of it. Well, they can't do it. They've never been able to do it in the past, and they're never going to be able to do it in the future. You know, this is where it comes down to each and every one of us taking responsibility for themselves. You know? And if you're going to get together and you're going to create a social system, make sure damn well that it is a voluntary social system. You know? Because if it's a social system that can only work at the point of a gun, oh, I'm sorry, there must be something wrong with that. You know, and that's exactly the way I would always put that. You know, a lot of times I may come off sounding to a lot of conservatives like an old hippie. Perhaps I am. You know, but I do believe that peace and love are the way to go in the end there. You know, but these things only work about, folks, when it's all done honestly, and it's only done by volunteer, you know, voluntary association, folks. You know, it is a huge difference than rounding people up at the point of a gun and say, here, you produce so that others can eat. So it'll never work. It's never worked in the past, and it won't work in the future. All right, folks, with that, I am hoping that all of you have a very, very fine Thanksgiving, that you all have plenty to eat, that you all get to say hello to your relatives, that all of your relatives, including yourselves, have a very safe holiday. If you are traveling, keep your eye on the road. Keep your hands on the wheel. If you're going to be at home, keep your eye on the stove. Don't want any fires. Fires are always a bad time. This is a bad time of year for that, too. You know, so have a very, very happy and safe holiday. As for us here, the staff at the Politics Cafe, I'm wishing much the same thing. But as always, the staff is standing around tapping his feet, wondering when I'm going to let go. Because it is, after all, at the top of the hour here. Once again, the lights have all gone dim. The tables are getting piled high with the chairs. The waitresses have already beat feet and taken holiday, and the maitre d' is on his way out the door, too. But as always, once the cafe is closed, the bar will be open, and Politics Lobby 4 are going to be open here for a little while longer. We'll do some chit-chatting and what have you, and we'll talk to you. But in the meantime, folks, have a happy and safe holiday, and I wish you all a very, very happy Thanksgiving from all of us at the Politics Cafe and HearnCode.com. Take care, folks, and good night. We'll see you next week.